Madam Deputy Prosecutor, thank you for speaking with the Global Observatory today.
Thank you for having me.
The ICC has been in operation for 10 years.
Yes.
At the review conference in Kampala last year, there was wide agreement that the Rome Statute needs almost no amendments and that the court is working well. Mm-hmm. What is your view of the current state of the ICC and of the role of international justice more broadly?
I think that, I'm one of those who support the idea that there was really no need for an amendment of the statute as we are now. You will recall that Kampala conference last year, the ICC had not even yet gone to a full cycle of a case. You know, and as you know, we've just completed the Lubanga trial, the Lubanga case, which is the first ICC case this year, and we're still expecting the decision in that case. So I think that one of the strongest arguments to make about not amending or changing anything is at least let the court go into a full cycle, let it try and test all the parts of the statute that we should be dealing with before you want to amend. And I have to say that over these few years that we have had trials going on, pretty much this has been happening. The new areas that perhaps the other ad hoc tribunals did not have, such as victim participation and so on, have all, we've gone through it. You've seen what has happened in the Lubanga trial. You've seen also in Katanga, and even it's going to be likewise in Bemba, and all the trials that are ongoing, the full participation of victims happening for the first time. And I think pretty much the chambers now have worked out very well the modalities of participation, which was a challenge maybe at the beginning of our proceedings. But all of this is coming through. And I think that what we really need to do, as was decided last year, is let us run through a course. Let us run through these areas and then decide whether we really need to go back and look at the statute again and change it. Let's try and see what works, what has not really worked very well.
Speaking of the full cycle of court proceedings, mm-hmm. some critics pointed to the length of time required mm-hmm. to conclude trials. Mm-hmm. Do you foresee faster prosecutions in the future?
Mm-hmm. I think with respect to the length of trials, if you really look at so far the trials that are ongoing at the ICC, I don't think whether it's a fair criticism to talk about the length of trials. We have seen the Lubanga case, and you can effectively say that the case really started in 2009. Today it's about 2 years, okay? And if you look at the way the prosecution has presented its evidence, we tried as much as we can to stick to our promise that we're going to be focused both in our investigations and our prosecutions. I think it took us from January to July to present our case. Of course, then came other issues of the challenge that was made by the defense on the abuse of process and those other things, which are really relatively out of the prosecution's hands, but which I am happy that the court has dealt with it in the way that it has dealt with it. I think that has gone a long way to show the credibility of the court, and that the chambers are concerned with ensuring that justice and fair trial happen at the ICC. So I think it was bound to happen, maybe. It has happened, and it has happened in a fair way. But again, if you compare even the case of Katanga Ngujolo, or you take Bemba, we have completed under 1 year The presentation of our evidence and the defense has even started, almost complete also in Katanga. And in Bemba, we have also progressed very fast. And I think before the end of this year or early next year, we would also have concluded our presentation of evidence. If you take this and compare it to other ad hoc tribunals or other international tribunals, you will see that we have actually been proceeding very fast. And you have to take this against the backdrop of the fact that this is an international criminal court. It is investigating and prosecuting in situations of ongoing conflicts. We are faced with huge challenges of witness protection, of cooperation, and all that comes with international prosecution. So if you really, really look at this, you know, in context, not out of context, but in context, you will see that definitely the length of trials with respect to the ICC, I think we've been doing pretty well.
The ICC is almost by default involved in situations of ongoing conflict. There's been a long-standing debate ever since the ICC came into being about a possible tension between the aims of peace and justice. Mm-hmm. In your work as the deputy prosecutor of the ICC, have you observed such tensions? And if so, how do you reconcile them?
I think the issue of peace and justice have always been there, not just with the creation of the ICC. If you look at the history of international criminal justice, peace and justice has always been there. And I don't think it's going to go away, because ICC's mandate is just a piece in the global solutions that are being found to resolve some of these conflicts or to bring stability into to some of these situations. So the peace and justice is there. You know, you've seen it happening in our Darfur situation. You have seen it happening in Uganda, our Uganda situation. It did arise even in those situations that are under preliminary examinations, such as Guinea. You have seen it come up again, even in Kenya. So it will be there. In all the situations that we are investigating or prosecuting, the issue of peace and justice will come. Even in the most recent one, Libya, you know, some are saying that maybe we shouldn't have issued the warrants. Then perhaps the conflict would have ended. But I want to say that it is really high time we stop thinking about the warrants of the ICC or the intervention of the ICC as being the obstacle to peace, because it is not. It is the lack of enforcement of the decisions of the ICC that really is the problem. And this is what this is how we need to refocus our attention on that. If the international community or those who are concerned with bringing back stability and security to this region, if we start to think that peace and justice can actually work together, that they are not mutually exclusive, then I think half the battle is won. But once we still think that we need to sequence before we think about accountability, or we need to forget about it for the time being and see whether there is a possibility later on, once we achieve peace. If we continue on this path, what we end up having is neither peace nor justice, and that's unfortunate.
Sometimes international criminal prosecutions are also criticized for focusing mostly on a delegitimized losing side in a conflict. Mm-hmm. With the exception of Kenya, where individuals from all involved parties have been indicted, all current ICC prosecutions seem to fit this pattern. How do you respond to this criticism?
I think we should stop also looking at geographical balance, looking at one side, therefore you look at the other side as a criteria for our investigations, because it is not. You know, the mandate of the Office of the Prosecutor and of the ICC is very clear. You go after those who bear the greatest responsibility for the crimes that fall within our jurisdiction. And I think we should strictly be guided by this consideration, which is what the statute says. Once we start to think about, because I have prosecuted one side, I need to prosecute the other side, because I am in Africa, I need to go out of Africa. If we are guided by these things, we politicize the mandate that we have been given. And this is very dangerous for the court. And really, we all need to focus our attention on that, because people just seem to think that, oh, you've tried this one, you should try from the other side. Maybe that's why they are so happy with the Kenya investigations and the request for warrants. But there, we were not going at one political side, then the other political side. That was not what guided our investigations. We realized that both sides were involved in the conflict. One thing that we have always said at the very beginning is what concerns us is the evidence. What is the evidence, and where is the evidence leading you? It is because of this policy of, you know, collecting the evidence, going after those most responsible, that we have opened the investigations that we have opened, whether it is in Uganda, whether it is DRC, whether it's Central African Republic. It is not other considerations like political, or this group is, you go after this group, then go after the next. As I said, if you really use that criteria, it's going to compromise our work a great deal. And at the end of the day, it's going to be very harmful for the credibility of the court.
Another criticism levied at international criminal tribunals relates to their high costs. How can we best explain these expenses? And what is the ICC doing to assist victim communities?
I think firstly, I want to say that if you compare what is being spent on justice to what is being spent in war, I think it's not even 1% of that. I mean, statistics have proven that. So that's there. But you should also take note that ICC is the first international criminal court created that also took into account victim participation. And this was as a result, most of it was as a result of what happened in the ad hoc tribunals and how the victims felt so helpless that they are just passive subjects. You know, they're used as witnesses, but when it comes to them being participating, having their views and concerns, and at the end of the day seeking for reparations, it didn't happen. So it is happening at the ICC. And again, I give the examples of the trials that have taken place so far, and how victims have been very active subjects in those trials. I think the idea of setting up a trust fund for victims has been great. I still believe that the issue of reparation, compensation, rehabilitation is a very tricky one and needs careful thoughts. It is not, as I said, one size fits all. You need to look at the situation, all of the situations, and see what is the best approach that you have to take. It is not the work of the Office of the Prosecutor, of course, to talk about reparation. I mean, to deal with reparation. It is the judges, you know, and they will decide how they want to decide, and the Trust Fund for Victims will take it up from there. But what we have been doing at the level of the Office of the Prosecutor is see how we can connect, you know, situations that can help each other. And I'll give you the example of Colombia, which is taking a leading role there and is willing at the moment to share its experiences with the Reconciliation Committee in Kenya. So these are two countries in two different continents and maybe have gone through similar experiences and they're willing to share. So even from the very beginning, we are thinking of this as not just to wait until there is a decision by the court that we start thinking about reparation. I think from the very beginning, through development efforts and so on, we can already start thinking of how to address victim issues and reparation.
I would like to also briefly touch upon one of the situations before the ICC. How do you see the role of the ICC in Libya's post-conflict transition? Can you comment on the progress of the ICC's investigations in Libya? And is there a chance or a likelihood that more indictments will be issued?
As you know, Libya, under Resolution 1970, was referred to the ICC. The historic aspect of that resolution is that it was a unanimous decision, having both states parties and non-states parties of the statute voting to have the situation referred to in Libya. And I think that was a classic example of a consensus by the international community over an issue. Libya is one of those cases that, you know, we can put on record where the Office of the Prosecutor has reacted in a very fast and efficient manner. And within 3 months, we were able to make a request for arrest warrants to issue. Our investigations in Libya has not stopped. We've not stopped. Even with the demise of Gaddafi, we're still investigating. At the moment, we are through intermediaries trying to talk to Saif al-Islam, whom you know is one of those that has been issued, arrest warrants have been issued against him, as well as al-Sanusi. It's a very sensitive situation, as you know. One needs to be very careful in how you make these contacts to be able to achieve a good result. The fact that these arrest warrants also have been issued against three people is not does not mean that if our investigations generates other targets that we should go after, we wouldn't. So the situation, as you know, in Libya is very fluid. It is changing rapidly every day. We are in constant contact with the transition government there. And we believe that we would continue our investigations and see how the situation unfolds. But it's very, very difficult to predict given the circumstances on the ground.
Finally, I would like to speak with you about the future of the ICC. Mm-hmm. How do you see the court evolve over the next years? And in your view, what should the priorities be? Mm-hmm. Better outreach to victims? Mm-hmm. Expanding the court's work beyond Africa, concluding more trials. The list could be expanded, but I would really like to invite your views.
It's a long list that I think if you start to prioritize one after another, it probably would not be as efficient as we want it to be. Because one thing with the court is that everything is happening almost at the same time. You have mentioned outreach. That is crucially important because the work of the court has to be known, has to be out there, not only in the situation countries, but as much as we can. What ICC does, what the mandate of the ICC increasingly has to be understood. I think that is crucial because once it's understood, people will be able to know what to expect of the court. But if it is not, of course, the expectations remain high. ICC will be conceived as, let's say, one of them targeting Africans and not the others. I think all of that is as a result of not understanding the mandate of the court. Again, the issue of victims is very, very, very important. Issues of reparation is very important. Conducting efficient investigations and trials. You know, at least that is somewhere that the Office of the Prosecutor, we have come to learn over the years that is crucially important to have focused investigations and also be able to contribute to having focused trials. So I think that all of these areas that you've mentioned, we need to move in parallel. You know, we really need to in parallel because they are all interrelated. And all of them are crucially important for the existence of the court and for the future of the court. Another area that I think that we need to also focus on and devise as much as possible ways in which we can improve it is cooperation. Because the court is set up in a way that it is a criminal justice system. You know, we will do the judicial part. The judges will issue the decisions. The decisions is whether to arrest or whether to sentence. They will issue the decisions, but those decisions have to be executed by others, and that's the state's parties. So cooperation for us to start investigations, for us to deploy to the field, for us to receive people at the court, for us to go through trials, it's crucially important. So it is an area which I think that we also need to focus. I will not, of course, forget the staff. It's crucially important that we have, we take into consideration qualified, experienced staff for the court, because I think this is important. And at the same time, to also bear in mind the welfare of those whom we already have on board. All of these things are together. You have to have a holistic approach to dealing with them. You know, if you say that, oh, okay, I'm only concerned with this and not with that, in the end, you will run into trouble. So I think these are the priority areas for the court, and one should bear in mind for all of them.
Madam Deputy Prosecutor, thank you so much for speaking with the Globe Observatory today.
Thank you very much, and thank you also for your work.